and welcome to a Juno Afternoon today. My name is Scott Burt, and I'll be your host. Have a nice show lined up for you today. We have folks from the Alaska Design Forum here with us, and we also have folks from JWAC to talk about World Quest. Hallie Denton from One Night Stand tonight at the Jack, the Juno School, the high schools will talk about the selection process, how you choose going to one high school or the other for eighth graders. And Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, National Native News, and more here on a Juno Afternoon, January 21st, 2014. Here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A proposed pipeline that would carry Alberta oil to British Columbia for export to South Asia continues to run into opposition by Native and environmental groups. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, some First Nations leaders say opposition is growing.
The proposed Northern Gateway pipeline is vital to Prime Minister Stephen Harper's vision of Canada becoming a net exporter of oil to new markets in Southeast Asia. That and another pipeline proposal to carry Alberta oil to Texas refineries could mean thousands of jobs and money to Ottawa. To get First Nations support, Harper has dispatched a special envoy to help resolve an impasse with Native groups over oil and gas developments. But that envoy, Doug Iford, says so far there has not been a constructive dialogue about the energy projects. And now the opposition appears to be growing. Chief Reuben George is with the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation.
When we stand up, it's not just for our future generations, but it's for all of Canada's future generations that we're going to do this for. We're not protesters, we're protectors. We're protectors of our land, we're protectors of our water.
George says non-Indigenous groups have now joined the call for a ban on the proposed pipelines as well as on new tanker traffic to transport that oil. In 2010, about 130 First Nations signed a declaration pledging to halt the project. Many Aboriginal leaders say they understand the opportunities presented by energy development, but they want that development to be environmentally sustainable and to acknowledge Aboriginal rights. The stakes are high. There are more than 600 major resource projects planned in Western Canada over the next decade, worth about $650 billion. But without building trust and including First Nations in the negotiations, many of them could be scrapped or delayed. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A community loan fund based in South Dakota has received a six-figure federal grant to assist Native entrepreneurs on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Jim Kent has more.
Lakota Funds plans to use the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration grant to launch the Building Native Industry Institute. The three-year initiative will deliver at least 26 business education classes to 625 participants through 11 public access points and an online learning center. Spokesperson Kadem Fisher says the Building Native Industry Institute will help Native American entrepreneurs overcome the challenges of working on the reservation, which include limited resources and limited local infrastructure.
Our whole hope is to expand the private businesses on the Pine Ridge Reservation to develop curriculum specifically towards industries such as construction, retail, healthy foods, artisans.
Seminars conducted by the Building Native Industry Institute will include topics on starting and growing a business, marketing, business planning, accounting, and human resources. The ultimate goal of the Building Native Industry Institute is to establish 60 new businesses on the Pine Ridge Reservation. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Four U.S. senators introduced the Native Language Immersion Student Achievement Act last week. The bill seeks to preserve Native languages and help strengthen culture and education. It would establish a grant program to fund language programs to improve high school graduation rates, increase college enrollment, and prepare students for jobs. The bill would provide funding of $5 million in 2015. In January 2000, the U.S. Mint issued the Sacagawea dollar coin featuring the Shoshone woman with a child on her back. In 2009, the Native American dollar coin program began with Sacagawea on one side and the reverse design changing annually to honor the contribution of tribes or individual Native Americans. The 2014 design commemorates Native hospitality during the Lewis and Clark expedition It depicts a man offering a pipe and a woman offering fish, corn, roots, and gourds. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PICCLICKGIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, and welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. It's Tuesday, about 5 minutes after the hour here in downtown Juneau. Some warm weather here. I'm joined in the studio now by our news director from KTOO, Ms. Rosemary Alexander, and she has a special report for us. What do you have, Rosie?
Thanks, Scott. Well, just a few minutes ago, Juneau Representative Beth Curtula resigned her seat to take a position at Stanford University. As we all know, she's the House Minority Leader and has been since 2006. She announced her job on the House floor, and she will be a visiting fellow at the Center for Ocean Solutions at Stanford. Anchorage Representative Chris Tuck has been selected as the Democratic Caucus by the Democratic Caucus as the new minority leader. Tuck has previously served as the minority whip. Representative Max Gruenberg, who's also of Anchorage, will move from Democratic floor leader to the minority whip. Curtula says that the Stanford position is a perfect fit. She says all the boxes checked. She has a background as a legislator, an attorney, and her years of work on coastal zone policy for the state of Alaska. As a fellow at the Center for Ocean Solutions, she will serve as a legislative expert on ocean issues. And I just finished speaking just a few moments ago for the director of the Center of Ocean Solutions, and this is the first time the center has had an elected position in this position,
wow,
or elected policymaker in this position, and Meg Caldwell told me that they are very, very excited to have Representative Curtula step into this position. Curtula says she's leaving a strong House Democratic caucus, although it's now much smaller, and her work will begin February 3rd in Stanford. Her last day in Juneau, or her last day in the legislature, that is, will be on Friday. She was first elected in 1998. And she actually had the first legislation in the state on cruise ship pollution, which at the time was one of the toughest laws, was the toughest law in the U.S. on cruise ship pollution. As she departs the legislature, the Alaska Democratic Party will have to provide Governor Parnell with a list of nominees for the seat, and Parnell will have 30 days to make an appointment after that.
Well, thank you for that report, Rosemary.
We'll have a lot more at 4:30 on KTOO News.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right, I'm going to play some music for you here as I bring in my first guests from the Alaska Design Forum. This is the California and Montreal Guitar Trios. These six, looks like, gentlemen will be in on the 27th of January. They're going to be playing at Thunder Mountain. So, again, the California and Montreal Guitar Trios, January 27th, and here's a taste of their music. All right. That was the California and Montreal Guitar Trios playing on January 27th at Thunder Mountain High School. Tickets can be obtained at the Jack, among other places, I'm sure. Oh, I'm going to play that one for you later. And now I am joined in the studio by Evelyn Russo and Stanen Sigurd. Welcome. Evelyn, you're from the Alaska Design Forum, and Stanen, you are a guest speaker. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's very nice to have you. Why don't we start with you, Evelyn? Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the Alaska Design Forum is?
The Alaska Design Forum is a nonprofit organization that has events throughout the state. We were founded in 1992, and our mission is really to talk about the importance of the built environment. And what we do is we bring architects and artists and people in all kinds of arts-related fields to Alaska, sometimes to lecture, to do work, installations. But our main thing is the lecture series. And we're kicking off this year's lecture series with Stanen. Our theme this year is bling, which is going to be really fun. We're really interested in seeing what the role of ornamentation is in design and how that all works together. So that's what we're about.
Great. Thanks, Evelyn. And Stanen, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am a fashion designer. My full name is Stanen Erla Sigurðardóttir, and I come from Iceland. I am honored to be here in Alaska for the first time ever. The reason why I'm here is probably because I have worked in the fashion industry for a very long time, for prestigious labels, high fashion houses, between America and Europe. So I guess I know a lot about bling.
Great. And for some of our listeners who may never have seen your work or haven't had a chance to go to your website, if you could give us a sort of a layperson's description of your work, what do you like to do the most?
People in most cases have a notion of a fashion designer being, it's all about the models and the fashion shows.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, it isn't.
Okay.
It's about the craft.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the craft of making things and how you are, what you are inspired by, and that you know the craft and how you put it out there.
Okay.
So I'll be talking about how I've taken knitting into high fashion and what I've made out of it. So I can honestly say it started all with the craft.
I see. It's interesting, and I suspect, Evelyn, that you all planned this to happen right before Wearable Arts. I don't know if you've had a chance to hear about the event we have here in Juneau.
Well, it does tie into that. In fact, there's a similar event in Anchorage in 2 days that Stanen's going to judge called Object Runway, which is somewhat similar to Wearable Arts. So, yeah, it's all part of that. And she's also going to be doing a rhythm knitting workshop in Anchorage.
I have this goal in life that I want to bring back the art of knitting to people.
Uh-huh.
And I've created a workshop called Rhythm Knitting, and I put out videos on YouTube for everybody to see, and if they want to learn how to knit. And it's about bringing back the old craft that we all came from.
Mm.
And I use drummers, so people find the rhythm in the knitting.
Mm.
And it's the workshops I've done so far have been extremely successful, both at the Kennedy Arts Center, in Greenland, in Sweden. And it's almost like a meditation. And that's how the elderly people that always talk about knitting. It has a certain rhythm to it. And if I can get young people interested in it again, that would actually fascinate me. And I've left something behind.
Right.
I passed it on forward.
Yeah, it seems like it's having a resurgence. And aside from the rhythm that you're describing with knitting, how else would you explain how so many people enjoy the process? Does it have to do with losing time, being involved, being focused in your process? What do you also like about
The thing I like, and I've seen so many students that I've taught this at schools, is when you take the knitting needles away and you make people knit with their fingers, you find the rhythm. Because if you're just knitting with needles, you don't really feel it. But when you start doing it with your fingers, just to learn, then you almost find the meditation form with it.
Interesting.
And that's how I use the drummer. The drummer kind of leads the way into it. And it's everybody comes usually out of the workshop like as if they had been in a meditation form.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting because if I can teach the young children to do that and using yarn as a media to connect things, then I've left something for knitting to flourish with.
Sounds very interesting. This talk here is part of the lecture series Bling, right?
Correct.
The role of ornamentation in contemporary design. So tell us a little bit about some examples of bling that you might talk about.
I'm actually using my own company in order to do that.
Okay.
I'm taking, people use fashion in very different ways. They use fashion to decorate themselves with. But there's also pieces of clothing which I call classical fashion.
Mm-hmm.
They last time. And it's funny because I went to both your state museum and your other museum here. And I'm finding patterns that could be, they're so modern today. And you know it when you see it. And I liked my fashion to be something that I'll pull out of my closet 10 years from now and I can still wear it.
Right.
That is truly a fashion piece for us, the fashion designers.
Well, that's a great definition. I like that. All right. And so, nuts and bolts-wise, Evelyn, this lecture is when?
Tonight.
It's tonight.
6 p.m.
The Silver Bow?
The Silver Bow, the back room at the Silver Bow.
Well, that'll be a nice place for it, nice and cozy atmosphere in there.
Nice and cozy, and you can come a little early and get a glass of wine at the new wine bar.
Oh, exciting.
Push that while I'm here.
Seems like fashion and wine also go together.
Or a bagel or other things as well, but... admission is $10. We do have discounts for students and other people who may not be able to pay. We don't want anybody to not come because they can't afford it. And it's the first of our lecture series of the season, so it'll be a great season.
Great. Well, thank you for your time. Is there anything you'd like to add?
I think Alaska is fantastic. It reminds me a lot of Iceland, except you have bigger mountains.
Huh. Well, welcome, and I hope you have a great stay while you're here.
Thank you.
If you'd like more information on this, I suspect they could go to alaskadesignforum.org.
That's correct.
And you can see a link to this lecture series and also Stainin's work. There's a link to her website and some really neat stuff there. Again, that's alaskadesignforum.org. Stainin and Evelyn, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Take my stand. I'll be dead and gone. Hang me, oh, hang me, so I'll be dead and gone. I wouldn't mind your hanging, Mars, but you're waiting in jail so long. Oh, Lord, I've been all around this world.
Back on a Juno afternoon. It's about 24 minutes past the hour. I'm your host, Scott Burton, and I've been joined here in the studio by the Juno World Affairs Council, specifically Lauren Jones and Carl Broderson. Welcome, you two.
Howdy. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. It's nice to have you here. Carl, were you going to maybe start and tell us a little bit about what JWAC is, in case folks out there don't know?
I would love to. The Juno World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership organization. Our goal is to encourage dialogue and understanding of important international economic, political, and social issues through expert presentation, informed discussion, and other educational activities. We bring the world to Juno, and I may have that written on a piece of paper in front of me.
Sounded very professional.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. And I understand this is a big event for you coming up. You want to tell us about that, Lauren?
It is. It's our 10th annual World Quest. It is our major fundraiser for the year. It's our only fundraiser. All of the events that the World Affairs Council puts on during the year are free to the public.
Okay.
But this event is our major fundraiser. We have an international buffet. We have a silent auction that I've been working real hard to put together. A lot of great items on there. We do a dessert auction so that everybody that all the tables can bid. We try to have at least one dessert per table so the people can have bid on the dessert and raise money and then eat the dessert while they're doing the trivia contest. And then the major event is a trivia contest. We break it up into five sections and ask questions, about 10 questions. The tables form teams. We have a trophy for the team that gets the best scores.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon Gateman and Senator Dennis Egan will be the two MCs. They keep it really lively, and it's a blast. Everybody that comes just has a wonderful time.
Do you see some rivalries start to happen between the tables? I mean,
absolutely.
Let's get serious.
Absolutely.
The team that won last year is largely here this year, and they're intent on defending their championship. So
that sounds like a lot of fun. I know there's a lot of trivia buffs here in town who would probably love to participate in that. And I think what you guys do in general is a neat thing. I think sometimes here in our isolated fjord-surrounded community, sometimes we can forget about the world outside, and it's good to bring it to us.
I have a paragraph on that, too. You want to hear it?
I do.
So, in pursuit of JWAC's goal, JWAC organizes presentations, lectures, and panel discussions for the benefit of our members and the public. Speakers have included ambassadors, professors, business leaders, politicians, explorers, activists, and more. And all of our speaker events are free and open to everyone.
Great, so and accessible, too.
And last year, we actually did two day forums, one in the spring on China and one in the fall on Canada.
Okay.
The one scheduled this year will be in October. We do those in joint with the University of Alaska Southeast, do it at their campus, and this year it's going to be on Mexico.
All right.
October.
What draws each of you to this program? There's a lot of things to be involved with in Juno. Carl, we'll start with you. What do you like most about it?
Always been interested in what's going on in the outside world and appreciate when people take time and effort to try to learn more. My actual involvement in WorldQuest came through participation many years ago. I was brought in and I was supposed to be a ringer, but I only made a difference on literally one question. Oh, well.
Carl, how about you?
Well, I traveled a lot after I retired and saw a lot of the world, and I knew a lot of the people that were involved in World Affairs Council. So I started attending events, and they had an opening on the board. So I jumped in, and the last couple of years I've been the vice chair, and in last 3 years I've been in charge of running the WorldQuest program, putting the program together, getting all that stuff along with Carl and several other people, and you know, getting it all put together. So
all
it's
right.
Just it's an interest to find out what's going on in the world, and as Carl said, try to bring the world to Juneau so that all of us have a chance to hear different opinions.
All right. I understand you may have brought some trivia questions, some samples.
Yes.
So we can get a flavor for what we should prepare for.
We have a few from last year that were used. It's hard to get a flavor. You need 10 or 12 questions,
okay.
I feel like. They're
okay.
Somewhat creative. And we'll just start right off. Google uses spiders to crawl the Internet and index it for searching. What animal does Alyeska use to clean the inside of the Trans-Alaska pipeline? Is it A, porcupines? B, black sheep. Note, they start out white in Prudhoe Bay. C, ferrets. Or D, pigs. You have 1 minute. Discuss.
And are they all multiple choice?
They're all multiple choice. That's
my kind of trivia.
And that's the hard part in writing these questions is coming up with plausible and or hilarious alternatives that are completely wrong.
So should I answer that one?
Sure.
Pigs, right?
Well done. Yes.
Yeah,
all
absolutely.
Right. One
for,
point.
One for one.
So, more standard trivia.
Okay.
What were World War II-era German coding machines known as? A, Ultra, B, Black Box, C, Enigma, D, Verdunkelungsverrichtung.
I was going to go with Enigma just because it's such a great word. Reading your eyes right now, not getting... I'm going to go with D.
Are we blank slates? Oh, apparently. You were originally correct. It is the Enigma machine.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
It was.
Oh, man.
Yes. Go with your gut.
All right. This is it. Two out of three.
Okay. One more. Canada is redesigning its banknotes, or was last year, and has been running into problems. Fortunately for the Bank of Canada, Banque du Canada, only one of the following currency disasters, les catastrophes de monnaie, is real. Is it A, in the anti-counterfeit microprinting, the word Canada was misspelled? B, Clarence House has objected to the bill's image of the Queen, which they say shows her wearing one too many strands of pearls for the occasion. Or C, the Braille denomination indicators in the corners of each bill all say 10. Or D, the graphic artists use the wrong kind of maple leaf.
That's a tough one. Reading you guys, looking for something here. I'm going to go for D.
Correct. Maple leaf. Well done.
Well done.
Two
right.
out of three.
I'll sell you a ticket today.
We can't get Carl Castle to do the answering
exactly,
machine message.
Right?
That's right.
I'd do it if you wanted, but I don't know what that would get you.
You get probably. Carl Broderson's voice on your answering machine. Thank you for playing today. All right. Gentlemen, well, thank you for your time. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about the event?
Just that tickets can be purchased at the door. Doors open at 6.
Yeah.
And dinner will start about 6:30. Silent auction will close at various times. Tickets are $60 each for adults, $30 for students. We know we're going to have one team from the university, and I believe that Bruce Botello is bringing the United Nations class from high school.
Oh, fun.
So there should be some bright young people as well as some of us old gray-haireds.
Their
there.
Brains work fast.
They do. So it'll be a fun evening. We just encourage people to show up early, buy their tickets, and come and enjoy the evening.
It's very low-key. It's easy to do. It's fun.
That's this Friday, January 24th, Centennial Hall at 6 p.m.
You got it.
All right, guys. Thanks for your time.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Those are the sounds of the California and Montreal guitar trios that will be joining us here in Juno on January 27th on Monday, so a week from yesterday, at the Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. So a diversity of music, Hang 'em High right there, and all kinds of surf rock, tangos, gunfighter ballads, of course, Bohemian Rhapsody. So check them out if you like. I am joined now in the studio by Hallie Denton. Welcome to Juno Afternoon.
Thank you. It's exciting to be here.
It's nice to have you. Hallie, I was wondering if you could start out. Let's see. Well, you're here to talk about the Jack's One Night Stand series, which you'll be presenting this evening.
Yes, tonight from 5 to 7.
Sounds good. Before we get to the details of that, I was wondering if you could tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. What keeps you busy here in Juno?
Well, I worked for the state till I was old enough to retire, which I never, ever intended to do. And since then, I realized I was now able to pursue the life of the arts that I couldn't before, because now I have a pension and health insurance and really can't be a starving artist, so it's great. I suddenly realized it's my chance to take some risks and do some things that I was always interested in doing. So,
well, good for you.
Here I am.
And what are some of those risks you're doing? What kind of arts do you like to produce?
I'm working on poetry. I got a degree in English. I always loved poetry, even as a small child, and I wrote poetry when I was a teenager, but that's gone into deserved obscurity, and I'm finding that I'm really enjoying writing again, and I'm doing stuff in the visual arts, and the presentation tonight will include a little bit of visual art stuff as well as poetry and the presentation on what it was like to go to the Tin House Workshop.
All right. And I understand you brought some work with you. Is that right?
I did bring a little work with me. The Tin House Summer Writers Workshop took place on the Reed campus, which is a remarkable venue. It's just beautiful. And their commons is an amazing thing. And I wrote a poem about the salad bar at the commons, about the experience of being in Portland and being at Reed and how it's different. This is called Portland. Beside me at the salad bar, a pale woman with troubled eyes gravely composes a salad of arugula, tofu, and watermelon, overlaid with balsamic vinegar, nutritional yeast, and cinnamon. Oh, Toto, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. I also have a poem that I've just finished recently about living in Juneau, probably living in any small town for a long time, because I have been here most of 45 years. So this is called Ghosts. This little town, ever-changing, is full of ghosts and images of long-vanished people and places. They shimmer under streetlights along the rain-washed pavements. They waver in the blowing snow and glow faintly against the dark spruce in the long summer twilight. There he goes, old army jacket, sandals, and black dog. Here she stands, gray hair, gray coat, rubber boots, and bright-flowered scarf. By the old high school he waits, blonde and lanky, black-framed glasses, cigarette, and smart-ass grin. To live in this place is to live with loss. People come, and then they go. Lured by beauty and adventure, driven away by cold and dark, depression and isolation, drawn away by love or opportunity. There are those who remain who love this place, but even they are finally claimed by age or by calamity. The buildings come and go as well. They burn, they rot, are torn down, repurposed, and rebuilt, but their shades remain. The seedy joints where we danced and drank and laughed our nights away are tourist shops and galleries. That shabby old frame building, scene of my first heartbreak, now an office parking lot. the forests we roamed through, sprawls of streets and houses. And the people who once lived here wander in the places that we knew, tireless shadows of what was. Only the winter stars, the mountains, and the weeping clouds remain constant. But we are all ghosts and remnants after all, the onion skin layers of our many lives folded and stitched, crumpled and torn and pasted back together. We drift through this little town, afloat like fallen leaves on the puddles and streams of rainwater memory.
Wow. Thank you for sharing those pieces with us.
Well, you're welcome.
And will those be representative of the kind of work you'll be sharing this evening?
Mostly. I hadn't realized until I sort of compiled a lot of stuff together. I write a lot about rain. I write about crows. I write, I guess, a lot of what I've been writing lately is what I would call poems of place. It's okay. Kind of what it's like to live sure. in Southeast.
Sure. I feel like that second piece really captured a sense of place for Juno.
Good. I'm glad. I know it did for me, but you never know with other people.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of a couple of the other First Night or One Night Stand artists. I believe it was Emily Wall last mm-hmm. week. And you'll be presenting this evening. Mm-hmm. And I suspect there's another one a week from today.
I think it's somebody who does visual arts, and I'm blanking out on her name right now.
I bet we'll meet her and get to talk about
it. No doubt.
And this is because you received an individual artist's award. Is that correct?
That's correct. Last January, I applied for the Tin House Summer Writers Workshop, which is a juried thing. You send in work, and you send in money, and then they mm-hmm. tell you if you got accepted. After I got accepted, I suddenly thought, criminy, it's going to be so expensive. And then a friend of mine said, well, you should apply for the Arts and Humanities Council individual artist grant, which was great. It defrayed about half the cost of the workshop, so right. It was a wonderful thing, and I hope the community will think it was money well spent.
Yeah. Gotta love the Jack.
Yeah, it's great.
Great resource.
Well, we're so lucky in this town to have that kind of thing.
Right.
In a town, to have the kind of support for the arts community that we have in a town this size, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Well, Hallie, thank you for coming in today, and thank you for sharing your work.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
You should come to the Jack. I made cookies.
Sounds good, and that's tonight at 6. Five o'clock tonight at the mm-hmm. Jack. All right, Hallie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 23rd of January, 2014. It's the birthday of the architect Henry Mather Green, born Brighton, Ohio, 1870, who, along with his brother Charles, emigrated to Pasadena in their early 20s, where they designed homes in the arts and craft style with some Japanese influences, and created a style of home that came to be known as the California bungalow. Simple, wooden, one-story, low-pitched roofs, balconies, porches. It was on this day, 1855, the first permanent bridge across the Mississippi was opened. It was in Minneapolis, a feat of engineering that connected Minneapolis on the West Bank to Nicollet Island to the village of St. Anthony on the East Bank. It's the birthday of the pharmacologist Gertrude Elion, born in New York City in 1918, went to work for the pharmaceutical company Burroughs Wellcome and formed a research partnership with Dr. George Hitchings that lasted more than 40 years. Over the course of her career, Gertrude Elion helped to develop drugs to treat leukemia, malaria, herpes, and AIDS, won the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 1988. It's the birthday of the poet and playwright Derek Walcott, born on the Caribbean island of St. Lucia, north of Venezuela, in 1930. Derek Walcott, who said, for every poet, it is always morning in the world, because the fate of poetry is to fall in love with the world in spite of history. And it's the birthday of the French novelist and essayist Stendhal, born Marie-Henri Bailey in Grenoble, France, in 1783. He wrote for journals and periodicals. He used dozens of pseudonyms, including William Crocodile, Old Hummums, and his famous name Stendhal. Published his first novel at the age of 44 and went on to write his masterpieces The Red and the Black and The Charterhouse of Parma. Stendhal, who said, it is better to have a prosaic husband and to take a romantic lover. Here's a poem for today by Scott Owens, Cleaning House. Pulling the house down piece by piece, we see each other at our worst, before we've even had our first date, my face itching with black insulation, yours covered with white dust of sheetrock. We scrape off paint and paper, buff out spots, old glue, unexplained stains, remove tacky paneling, revealing forgotten charm, original beadboard hardwoods, solid ceilings. We're woefully unprepared, untrained, under-tooled, cutting off pipes with hacksaws, filling holes with toothpicks, Brillo pads, good wood pulled up from where it wouldn't be seen, an odd sort of courting, really, hammer and nails instead of flowers, microwaved hot pockets for meals, red wine in paper cups, all glasses still mysteriously packed away, ripping out rotted casements of windows, hollow doors, seven layers of floor. We sweat together, swear together, bend in unison towards the necessary destruction that always precedes renewal. Cleaning House, Scott Owens, from his collection Eye of the Beholder, published by Main Street Rag and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right, and welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. It is Tuesday, January 21st, 2014. And I am joined here in the studio by Christy Germain of the Juno School District. Welcome, Christy.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you could begin by telling us what you do.
Yeah. Well, I am the assistant principal at Juno Douglas High School, and this is my first year in that position after 10 years of teaching in the Juno School District.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those, nine of them, were at JDHS. And really my purpose for coming today is to talk about our 8th grade to be ninth grade, kind of these school selection nights that are being held this week.
Okay. Before we get to that, can I ask you what exactly you have to do as an assistant principal? Are you the disciplinarian? What's your job?
Yes. Discipline is a part of my job. activities and also just working. We are a two-person administrative team, so a lot of it is done in tandem, in cooperation. I'm looking at today was an in-service day and planning the professional development for our staff and interacting with students. I try to make sure I also get some positive interactions. It's not all just discipline.
Right, I bet. Well, that sounds like fun. I bet it's a change from getting out of the classroom.
It is. Today at our in-service, I got to pass out papers again. It was great.
All right. So an exciting time for eighth graders, right? Which high school am I going to go to? And can they literally go to either?
Yes.
No matter where they live?
Yes.
Wow.
So the school district, it was part of our next generation plan to leave open boundaries for our two comprehensive high schools. And then we do have Yakusuke Dakahiti Alternative High School, which also doesn't have boundaries. Our 8th grade selection nights are really primarily for students to pick between JDHS and Thunder Mountain.
Okay.
And their choice cards that they submit will pick one of those two comprehensive high schools. And then if they're interested in Yakuska Dakahiti, there is an interview and kind of a follow-up process that happens there.
Okay. And I understand there's some visitations. They can go and visit the schools. Is that coming up soon?
Tomorrow is the first night, and then Thursday is the second. So parents who maybe have had an older student who've already gone through this process, we're changing it a little bit this year in that everybody will be at one school each night.
Okay.
So tomorrow night, starting at 5:30, we'll be at JDHS.
Okay.
We'll have the Thunder Mountain High School Administration and counselors and also Yakuska Dakahiti, along with Mrs. Casperson and myself from JDHS.
Okay.
And what the night is going to look like, we'll start at 5:30, and there'll be tours. We have students who are available to give tours of the facility, and obviously they can also chit-chat and answer questions during those tours.
Okay.
Members of our site council, parent group, other parents have been invited, so they can be there to answer questions, as well as teachers and members of our staff. And that tour time will go probably till about 6:15,
okay.
And then at 6:15, we're all going to meet in the commons, and we'll have a brief presentation, which will include the administration of all three high schools and going through some of that typical information, what a freshman can expect in high school, and then also a little bit of highlighting the differences between the schools. And then that's probably only about 15 or 20 minutes, and then we'll end with the last half an hour being additional questions, kind of the Q&A session, additional tours so people can really see the site.
Mm.
And all of that will be tomorrow night at JDHS and then again Thursday night at Thunder Mountain, same times, 5:30 to 7.
Wednesday night and Thursday night. Wednesday at JDHS, Thursday at Thunder. Did I get it right?
Yes.
All right.
That's exactly right. And then the idea kind of, in the past, we've had both presentations at both high schools at the same time, but we wanted to do one night at each with everyone there. If parents want to go to both, they
mm-hmm.
can.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be the same presentation in that 6:15 to 6:30 time.
Right.
So you might want to come early for tours, come later for Q&A, stay for the whole time, and just really get a chance to see the school, get a feel for the
sure.
school. Our hope is that students can make a decision, and then they can stick with that high school for 4 years.
Yeah.
They really have this opportunity to choose and make a commitment.
Right.
The thing that I think is neat, the choice card, when the students actually check the box for which high school, that's due on Valentine's Day.
Okay.
So it's kind of a picking your Valentine high school for the next 4 years. There's something symbolic there. But we want to offer the programs, offer people who can answer questions so that families and students can make that decision based on their priorities. And there are some programmatic differences, but on the whole, as a district, we have the same graduation requirement. We have the same state tests and things, and we're meeting the same common core at all three schools. But some of those subtle differences are what the parents and
sure.
the students need to get in and get a feel for.
Absolutely. Sounds like a great opportunity, and I hope a lot of people join you. Yeah.
And, you know, I think there probably are a lot of families out there that feel they already have their mind made up of which school
mm-hmm.
their child's going to go to for geographic reasons, friends, programs. There's a little bit of that legacy of JDHS we know is a big part, which I understand. I'm a JDHS grad myself.
Uh-huh.
But even if you think you have your mind up, we'd encourage people to come. Because if nothing else, they can get some questions answered. It's another chance that the student's in the school before next year. All of those things can help with the transition to high school because
yeah.
it is a big deal to come
right.
from middle school to high school.
All right, Christy. It sounds like a great opportunity. Again, tomorrow night at JDHS downtown, 5:30, and on Thursday out at Thunder Mountain at the same time. Anything you would like to add?
Well, since I'm here, I would like to give a little plug to Spamalot,
oh, yeah.
which is a cooperative effort. We have students from all three high schools who are performing. It's Monty Python Spamalot, opens this weekend in the JDHS auditorium, 7 o'clock Friday and Saturday, and Saturday also has a 2 p.m. matinee.
Sounds good. We had the cast in here last week.
Oh,
they were really fun. Well, Christy, thanks again, and I hope you have a great turnout, and I hope people take advantage of this nice opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. And that just about does it for a Juno afternoon today. Thank you for joining us here at 104.3, your place for news and talk in the capital city. The weather looks like it's going to be staying warm throughout the week. Tomorrow, patchy fog in the morning. Thursday, rain likely. Friday, mostly cloudy. Maybe no rain. Going into Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday mostly cloudy, highs around 40. Monday cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 42. We're having a heat wave here in Juneau. Join us tomorrow for a Juneau afternoon, same time, same place here at 104.3 at 3 p.m. And again, this is the California and Montreal Guitar Trios. We'll go now to All Things Considered.